Radio Influence. Podcasting redefined.
He got him in the white trunks. He hurt him.
That's beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the count. Whoa.
Here comes a submission. And it's all over. It's nice. All over. First round knockout.
Big.
He's out. Rich
one
Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen, happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Welcome to the October 10th episode of the MMA Report podcast with Daniel Galvan. I am Jason Floyd. Come here on this week's edition of the podcast. We're going to take a look back at everything that took place at UFC 229. Yes, we're actually going to talk about the fights that took place in the cage. Of course, we'll also talk about the aftermath, the brawl, and all of that. I'll be talking to Angelo Reyes, who gives a little perspective, since he's a boxing MMA coach, about Conor McGregor and kind of what he saw with this being Conor's first MMA fight in 2 years, and of course, coming off that boxing matchup. Plus, we're going to preview this weekend's Bellator 207 and 208. Of course, 207 on Friday night from Connecticut, and then 208 on Saturday from New York. Plus, I'm going to have interviews with Henry Corrales and Ray Rodriguez. Henry going to be fighting on Saturday night at Bellator 208. And then Ray is going to be headlining next week's LFA event against Cruz Gutierrez. Also, we'll recap what happened last Friday night at PFL 8. Get you ready for Saturday's PFL 9. We'll have our buy-sell segment. Plus, we'll talk about some MMA news and notes. Of course, you want to subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and Google Play. While you're there, leave a rating and review. Daniel, let's get right into these fights, because we do actually want to talk about what actually happened with Conor McGregor and Khabib Nurmagomedov. And there were some things that surprised me about this matchup. You know, last week on the podcast, I talked about the first 30 seconds to me was going to tell me a lot. In that first 30 seconds, we saw Khabib kind of seeing what Conor was going to do. Conor comes right at him. Of course, you know, Khabib gets him to the ground. No surprise there. But my first surprise of the fight was I thought Conor did really well in the opening round on the ground in limiting the amount of offense that Khabib was able to do.
Yeah, he did. Although I also do wonder how much of it was a conservative approach from Nurmagomedov as well. It did feel like both guys realized this was a 5-round fight, and it was a lot of it was about conserving energy. A lot of it was about, for Conor, if you get taken down, and maybe it's worth it to not necessarily fight to get back up every single second of the round. Maybe it's more worth it to concede the round, but also ensure you don't take too much damage. And that's probably what he did. But I also wonder for Nurmagomedov if he was also privy to that. Because you got to think that when you saw a more aggressive approach out of Nurmagomedov in round two, where it was essentially a 10-8 round, that dude must have been tired. Even if he didn't show it at a high degree, he must have been tired after nearly finishing Conor. So when you look at that first round, and maybe the anticipation was something more aggressive, I think in hindsight you look at it and you see both these camps realize that they did not want to be heading into a fourth or fifth round completely gassed. And I don't think either guy did. But one thing that did surprise me about Conor, Jason, is the fact that this is a guy who, to me, he didn't really fight like you normally see him fight, where when you watch Conor fight, I think he's a lot more – he makes it his type of fight. It's a lot of it's about his offense regarding the defense. Like he uses defense to create opportunities for his offense, and it felt like early on the focus was entirely 100% on defense to avoid losing the fight, whereas we've seen him before use defense to boom, offense, boom, the counter. It felt like rounds one and two, man, it was all about playing the defensive game to just avoid being out-wrestled and out-grappled. So when you kind of look towards another fight, I think you're going to see a bit of a different approach from McGregor, where he looks to control the fight more. He looks to take more risk early on, because when you do see that third round, it does kind of showcase the best-case scenario for Conor McGregor.
Yeah, I mean, really, the first round we've seen Khabib Nurmagomedov lose in the UFC. In that opening round, Conor actually did land more strikes, 39 to 18. He was actually 39 of 40 per fight metrics Khabib Nurmagomedov, 18 of 21. He did, of course, had that one takedown. And when I looked at the overall stats, I was kind of surprised that it was 3 of 7 takedowns. It just kind of felt like there were more takedowns than 3 takedowns for Khabib Nurmagomedov. My second biggest surprise from this fight was, if you would have told me that Khabib was going to win the stand-up part of this fight, I would have said, you're absolutely crazy. But by God, that's what he did, Daniel.
Yeah, he did. I mean, it could have been the fact that when you go for the wrestling, boom, there's the opening for the big right. But geez, at the end of the day, Conor is still, I would consider, one of the premier stand-up fighters in the UFC. And for Nurmagomedov to have any level of success, much less dropping McGregor, I totally would steal your point and say that was also a huge, huge, huge surprise. I was surprised that Nurmagomedov wasn't able to finish McGregor there from the Conor standpoint, because the deal with Conor is when he does face a great deal of adversity, he kind of finds a way out of a fight. Just looking back at the Nate Diaz fight, that's generally where that point comes from. But he found a great deal of adversity and he survived and made it to the next round. And there were several instances where it's like, damn, I feel like if this was a preliminary fight on a UFC card, you could theoretically stop it here. Obviously, you couldn't stop it at this point. But, Conor really took an incredible amount of damage. And I do think this is one of the few times in Conor's career. And keep in mind, the reason why this is one of the few times is because rarely we see him dominated. But this is one of the few times in Conor's career where we've seen how he kind of rebounds from being – nearly finished, and he rebounded quite well in that third round. And I guess the surprise there is the fact that this guy, Conor, now becomes the first fighter to take a round from Khabib Nurmagomedov.
I love the point you brought up there, where the one knockdown that we did have for Khabib Nurmagomedov in this fight is that, and it didn't officially go down as a knockdown, but I'll call it a knockdown, where I thought he did a beautiful job of faking like he was going to go for the takedown. Throws that right hand, and Conor did respond very quickly to that, but I did not see that going down. And we're going to get into the melee of what happened after. You're going to hear my conversation with Angelo Reyes, of course, a striking coach, boxing coach, and had a chance to talk to him just about what he saw from a technical aspect from Conor McGregor from coming from a boxing match to MMA. So here's my conversation with Angelo Reyes. Joining me now here on the MMA Report podcast is Angelo Reyes. We've had Angelo on the podcast before, of course, boxing, MMA head striking coach. Angelo, man, as always, I appreciate the time. Obviously, we're coming off Conor, Khabib, and as we've been talking about show, really trying to more talk about the fight, the first fight of the night as opposed to the second fight of the night in the stands. But, you offer a very interesting perspective because obviously this was Conor's first MMA fight in 23 months. Of course, the first time we saw him since his boxing matchup against Floyd. As you look at that fight, what did you see different from Conor as opposed to his last MMA fight, the boxing? And is it kind of a difficulty of being able to balance training for both sports?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, from my experience of having actually have had an athlete that did that, going back and forth from boxing to MMA on a regular basis, and also just knowing how complicated it is. It's, everybody thinks it's so similar, but it's not, man. It is like boxing would be like saying I'm going to go play basketball. And then MMA is like saying I'm going to go play NFL football. The ball's not the same. The rules not the. I mean, yes, there's contact, but one wears pads, one has a different shaped ball, one's got pigskin. You know what I'm saying? Like, so it's the same thing, and that's what Conor essentially did. Conor was coming off of doing, amazing as arguably the best striker, definitely coming off that division and being the champion and the double champion, and then he goes and puts his training into boxing so he can go fight Floyd Mayweather. Well, we saw what happened. 40-year-old Floyd Mayweather pretty much, did to him what Khabib did to him on Saturday night. But people have to understand that there's a bit amount of training that Connor did to have to convert going into boxing. And that actually, in a lot of ways, took a lot of momentum out of him coming back to MMA. I would have said that a better scenario for Connor would have been to go from the Floyd fight to maybe not going right to Khabib, but going into someone else, you know, lower in the division. You know, it's not like we didn't see him fight Dennis Seaver. You know what I'm saying? Like something to kind of get a lot of his timing back. But I'll give credit to Connor for jumping right into the fire. Also, though, at this point, he's back-to-back losses, both in boxing and in mixed martial arts, are also two of the worst beatings he's taken. So with that said, I don't know how much is going to be left in the tank on a mental level now going into whatever he does next, because we don't know what's going to happen with the suspensions or what the punishments are going to be. But let's say Connor can't fight MMA until maybe even closer to late next year. What would stop then Connor to wanting to go to a boxing match with, let's say, Paulie Malignaggi at this point, right? It seems like the Connor train is kind of going towards more, let me make money, proper 12. Let me, you know, it's not even about let me become the best again. Because if he wanted to be the best again, I would think, okay, let's go through the process. Let's go through a process again so we could get you back up to where you were the best. Right now, he's all about taking the highest risks for the highest rewards, win or lose. Well, yeah, he's probably gotten the highest paid for UFC now. With that loss to Khabib, which was really bad. And then he got paid buku bucks for his loss to Floyd. So what do you think Connor's going to do next? You know, is he going to go back to boxing? And I'll tell you this, if he goes back to boxing, I bet you he will get paid a lot of money for fighting Paulie Malignaggi. He's really hyping it up right now too, man. Or do you think he's going to go into MMA? Now, if he does go to MMA, let's say Khabib is the one suspended. I think someone like Tony Ferguson would absolutely murder Connor at this point, you know, just because I think there's definitely some, you know, I don't want to take away too much from Khabib and what Javier Mendez did to develop Khabib into this, you know, great fighter, you know, but Connor, you know, he went out there and he fought arguably the best pound for pound mixed martial artist at this time, coming off of a 2-year layoff. I wonder what would have happened if he would have had like two good bouts leading up to the Khabib fight. Well, you know what I'm saying?
The thing that jumps out to me about Connor is he could have taken the easy road. He could have taken a warm-up fight here, a warm-up fight there, but he's like, no, I want to go in into the toughest, you know, competition you can give me, which I think says a lot about Connor. I don't expect there'll be really. I don't expect him to get much. I would probably be surprised if there's any penalty he gets from the Nevada Commission just based on the fact that they gave him his check on Saturday night. To me, that's a pretty big sign that he got his check on Saturday night. I know the commission was in the UFC trucks monitoring everything, and that's when the decision was made to give Connor his check but not give Khabib his check, which disclosed the salary, the check that they got from the commission. Connor, $3 million. So there's a $2 million check that the Nevada Athletic Commission hears. And really at this point, it's more, you know, we'll see what the Attorney General does. And there's a lot to that. I will say this is the one thing that shocked me about the fight. If you would have told me going into this fight that Khabib would win the stand up, I would have said you are crazy. But by God, Angelo, did Khabib won the striking aspect of this fight?
Yeah, by the way, on my previous prediction to this, as I believe maybe you got to listen to it, I did predict that. I said, I don't think enough credit is being given about the fact that Coach Javier Mendez is one of the great minds we have in MMA, and what I have myself personally seen him do with Khabib striking. And just understanding, not so much, I mean, again, I'm not saying Khabib's going to get in the ring and go box Paulie Malignaggi. All right. That's not what I'm saying. What I am saying, though, is he has taught him how to use his striking to complement his overall game, which is the MMA grappling aspect, the MMA ground and pound wrestling aspect of everything. So you, and you have to see it. Like everybody who kept pointing to the Al Iaquinta fight, King Mo, even he messaged me, he goes, bro, man, what you said is very true on the prediction, podcast that I did where, I was saying, look, first of all, Al Iaquinta was a last minute opponent, but whatever. Having said that, when I was watching the fight, when everybody was talking about the holes that Khabib was showing, looked like to me that in pockets of that fight, Khabib wanted to try some of the new things out that Javier had been showing him. So he felt like, well, why not try it on a live fight? So then he was just kind of, I don't want to say he was sparring Al Iaquinta, but there were moments where he had been dominating Al Iaquinta so much that there were kind of moments also where he was like, I'm just going to kind of spar him and kind of play it out so that I could get my rounds in. Like in boxing, we would call that, hey man, don't go knock out the dude yet. Let's go and just get a couple more rounds in and then go finish him off, you know, right? Just so you get your rounds in. And that's what that fight looked to me. The fight everybody should have been looking at for studying was the Barboza fight, which I was there for to watch that. The way he did Barboza was exactly what I thought was going to happen to Conor. And that's what I said. I said, yes, it is 50-50 in the sense that it is very possible that Conor could do to Khabib what happened to Aldo. Because I was one of the people back then that said, there's no way Conor's going to beat Aldo. Aldo's going to destroy him. And then what happens? 13-second knockout, right? But did you notice that when the fight start, right off the bat, what did you see Khabib do? Khabib didn't go and rush in forward. He played a zone and he forced Conor to have to kind of come in, which actually ended up helping him as he was kind of moving around and setting things up for that first initial takedown. And that happened like within the first minute. And then he pretty much kept Conor down for 4 minutes. Didn't you kind of see that?
I saw that one coming right from the start before this fight even started. I didn't think you would see, and I'm sure Javier probably went over that 13 seconds of Jose Aldo Conor McGregor with Khabib probably 100-plus times of like, look, this is why you don't rush in on Conor. He is a counter-striker. And so that's why I thought the, and I said this last week on the podcast, I thought the first 30 seconds of the fight would be very telling of how the fight would go. And I think that if you look at when Khabib got that knockdown of Conor, I think he did a great job of basically giving that look of he was going for a takedown and came with the punch and that led him to get it. I mean, look, you know, when it comes to the actual fight, we should be talking about, it was a great performance by Khabib. There's no question about it. Went out there, you know, and did what a lot of people expected him to do. I mean, it'll be interesting. My guess is I think Conor, you're probably going to put him. It wouldn't shock me. Anthony Pettis, I think, could be a potential opponent. I think you put him in a fight where, you know, it's likely going to be a stand-up. You know, with Khabib, you know, time's going to tell on that. I mean, obviously, we got to see what happens with the Nevada Commission. You know, I think best-case scenario for Khabib is 10% fine, which would be $200,000. I mean, that's still a lot of money. And a six-month suspension. I think that's the best-case scenario for Khabib. I'd say I'd be really surprised if the Nevada Commission did not just find him and there was no suspension. I mean, probably I would guess community service probably going to be put in there as well. But, you know, we're going to have to wait and see. But I do know your son picked Khabib. And obviously anyone who follows you on social media, that they know they'll see the picture of your son who does have a congenital heart defect. So kind of tell me about what was his reasoning in picking Khabib?
So this is crazy, right? This is the thing is, Jason. So first UFC fight I ever took this little champion to was July 6, 2013, Anderson Silva versus Chris Weidman 1, right? He's going to his first ever UFC fight, and they're giving out these towels. You know, you could either pick the American flag towel with Weidman or the Anderson Silva one. And at the time, you remember, Anderson Silva was undefeated as a champion for 6 years. I was a big Anderson Silva fan. I was like, oh, man, he's like the Roy Jones of of mixed martial arts. This is so awesome. We're going to see him fight Weidman. And I was going in there thinking, yeah, you know, I like Weidman, but I just can't see Chris beating Anderson Silva. So here's this little 9-year-old. I'm about to get my towel. He looks at me and he goes, Dad, no, don't pick that towel. Trust me, USA, baby. Pick Chris, the Chris towel. And I was like, okay, relax, kid, relax. First of all, you're 9, so you don't know anything about MMA. Secondly, you know, I actually know a little bit about this. I'm in the industry. It's my job, you know. So defer to Dad on this one. And it's going to be one of those nights where Anderson's going to put on a show. And he's like, no, how much you want to make a bet with me right now, Dad, that Chris will knock out Anderson? I was like, okay, man. All right, fine. Go ahead and pick your little USA towel with Chris Weidman's name on there, and then let's go sit down. So I'm sitting there. We're watching it. Sure enough, man, he knocks out Anderson Silva, and the rest of the night, this 9-year-old's just on me about, yeah, you're the expert, huh, Dad? And then ever since then, Jason, I've never picked against whatever he tells me. If I ask him, I go, who do you think is going to win? So yeah, I asked him before I had to get on any of the podcast shows or anything like that. Hey, who do you think is going to win between Khabib versus Conor? And he did say to me, he's 14 now, but he goes, well, you know how we watched Conor McGregor versus Floyd and he got beat pretty bad? Dad, well, Khabib's pretty good. And he's been beating everyone up really badly. So, and he's undefeated like Floyd. So I'm like, okay. So he goes, so I would go with the undefeated one on this. And I would say he's probably going to destroy Conor. And I said, okay, I'll go with that. So then the shows I went on or people who asked me, I said, this is what I'm going with. I'm going with Khabib by destruction. And it's going to go probably either the distance of destruction or it'll be a stoppage. But yeah, man, I never go against my son who, and thank you for mentioning, you know, that yes, he does have congenital heart defect. I think that a lot of people don't know too much about it. If you guys have the time, please just type in congenital heart defect on Google. You know, I'm doing everything that I can within the community of the families that we have with all the other parents and all the other kids that are dealing with congenital heart defect on a daily basis. You know, guys, there is no cure for this. This is something that happens to them and they go through many surgeries. My son himself, he's had 9 surgeries. His last open heart surgery was in 2008. That was his 9th one. So that means that from the time he was born till the time he was barely 4 years old, he had already had 9 surgeries up to that point. And a lot of children, you know, go through this. As you know, Jimmy Kimmel's child has a congenital heart defect. My good friend Ronnie Turiaf, congenital heart defect. Shaquille O'Neal's son, they just now mentioned that he's got to go through it now, right? And Sean White, he was born with congenital heart defect. So, you know, just bringing overall awareness to it and people knowing more about it and understanding that when you have someone like Joseph, who is a heart warrior every day of his life, man, that's the blessing in itself. I mean, that's to see him smiling and laughing and giving you a prediction on Khabib versus Conor, you know, like that's why, you know, me, Jason, I'm a very low ego type person because what the hell, you know, like all of these people, they're fighting over Khabib and Conor. Who cares, man? There's so much more things that we got to deal with in this world. And there are greater things that are far more important than MMA or boxing. That's designed for us to be entertained. That's not life choices. You know what I mean? So yeah, no, but that is why I picked Khabib. And if my son tells me to pick Anthony Joshua over Wilder, even though I think Wilder will win, I will not go against whatever my son says because he always tends to be right. Man, it's all right, crazy.
So does Joshua Wilder happen in the next 12 months?
Oh wow. Yeah.
You're no, confident no. We're gonna in that.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
I hope you're right. I hope
Come
you're
on,
right.
baby. I Come hope on. You... Like, no, Joshua already said it. He said, I don't even want to talk about anyone else. Deontay Wilder. That's my next opponent. I am 100% positive Josh was going to be right there ringside when Fury fights Wilder. And I liked all of Fury's antics. But at the end of the day, man, this is a person who came from having to beat drug addiction, was overweight, did a tune-up, pretty much, won the tune-up with Wilder there. But if everybody seemed there thinking, oh, this is a 50-50 fight, they are far wrong. They are so wrong. And yes, it's the heavyweight division and anything can happen. And yes, Tyson Fury did beat Vladimir Klitschko. But just like you saw this last Saturday, a long layoff in the sport that you're involved in, it does take a toll on you. And who Tyson Fury, the person he fought earlier this year to get him ready for a Wilder fight, he's not ready to take on someone like Deontay Wilder, who's just been absolutely knocking everyone out. And most likely, he will probably knock out Tyson Fury too. It may take a little longer than one round, I don't know, but most likely he's going to knock Tyson Fury out, and then you're going to see Anthony Joshua at Staples Center jump in the ring and say, I want you, and blah, 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 and then we're going to probably see two. Actually, I'll say this to you now too, Jason. I'll guarantee you you'll see two fights between the two of them if their fight happens next year, that'll be the first. You'll see at least the second. You'll see 100% at least a second, whoever wins or loses on Wilder versus
Joshua. And, of course, anybody wants to follow you on social media, it's Reyes Boxing on all the platforms. Angelo, man, as always, I appreciate time, and I'm sure once December 1st gets here, we'll have to have some conversations about Wilder and Fury.
Yeah, we will. For sure. Thanks, Jason.
Great stuff there from Angelo Reyes. I always love his insight into the striking game. And, you know, we're going to talk later about what's next for Conor McGregor. But the unfortunate thing about what happened after Conor tapped was that the actions, particularly by Khabib, it made us forget about what a great night of fights it was, Daniel. I mean, you look from the fight pass prelims all the way up to, obviously, Tony and Pettis putting on a tremendous fight. It's unfortunate that the melee after this took away from that. And there's so many things to spotlight with this whole melee. But I want to start off by first playing you what Khabib Nurmagomedov had to say, and this is from the post-fight press conference following UFC 229.
First of all, I want to say sorry to Athletic Commission, Nevada, sorry to Vegas. I know this is not my best side, you know, this is not my best side. You know, I'm human being, and I don't understand how people can talk about I jump on the cage, you know. What about he talk about my religion? He talk about my country. He talk about my father. He come to Brooklyn and he broke bus. He almost killed a couple people. What about this? What about this shit? Why people talk about I jump over the cage? Why people still talk about this? Like, I don't understand. I am respect. My father teach me, hey, you have to be always respectful. My old team, where I'm training California 7 years, everybody know who I am. All my friends, like everybody who know me, they know who I am, you know? And I told you guys, these guys, not only him, his old team and him, they tap machines. You know, I told you guys, when you put him wrong way, he gonna tap. You know, what happened today? Like, they call him two-time world champion, like two weight classes, but today he tap. And that's why, alhamdulillah, belt is here, undisputed, undefeated UFC lightweight champion. And you know, and I want to say something like, you know, like people little bit, it's not people, I think it's media. Media a little bit change MMA. This is respect sport, you know. This is not trash talking sport. This is respect. So like I told you before, guys, I want to change this game. I don't want people talk shit about like opponents, talk shit about his father, like religion. You cannot talk about religion, you cannot talk about nation, you know, guys, you cannot talk about this stuff. And you know, this is, for me, is very important. And thank you so much. Thank you, guys. Thank you for waiting for me here. I know my father gonna smash when I go home, because I know he's gonna smash me. And Nevada, sorry. Vegas, sorry. And Alhamdulillah, undisputed, undefeated UFC lightweight champion. Thank you so much. And I'm very proud about, like, all media talk about, he take picture with Putin, something like this. He just called me and he said he very proud of me. I win. And he said congratulations. And you know, I told you guys, everything I'm gonna change 6 October, and I do this. Alhamdulillah, thank you so much.
Daniel, there is so many things to discuss on that 2 minute and 40 minute clip that I just played for you with what Khabib Nurmagomedov said. I don't even know where to start, Daniel.
I mean, I definitely don't want Nurmagomedov's worldview to change the way of martial arts. Like, he doesn't necessarily come from a place where you think, damn, this is going to be great for every sect of people. But let's not talk about that. Let's talk about this. Why is he deflecting so much? Don't get me wrong. My immediate thought wasn't Khabib's the worst person in the world and Conor McGregor is a victim. But that was not my immediate thought. But the thing is, the reason why we are talking about the incident, Nurmagomedov, where you jumped outside the cage and started brawling, is because it literally just happened like 5 seconds ago. Like, that's why this is the conversation. You get what I'm saying? Like here's the thing. Like, okay, Jason, if I, like, punched you in the face, all right, you know, 4 years ago, and then 4 years later, all of a sudden, you kick me in the nuts out of nowhere, the incident we are going to be talking about is the fact that you kicked me in the nuts. You know, I'm still not going to get reprimanded for punching you in the face in the past. The moment is you kicked me in the nuts. We've already kind of discussed the Dolly attack. That was litigated in the media, and the dude went to jail. So, you know, if one guy has done one bad thing, that does not mean every time you commit a sin, we're going to go back to that. We're going to talk about what just happened. And what just happened is, like, Nurmagomedov jumped outside of the cage and instigated a fight. This guy who talks about respect, this guy who talks about changing the sport to be all about martial arts, et cetera, decided to, after winning a fight, jump outside of the cage and attack somebody who may have been talking plenty of crap. But at the end of the day, the big time issue here, and it was the big time issue with Conor throwing the dolly, is that doing that does put innocent people in danger. Like, the crowd around Dylan Danis, as well as what would have happened if there was a higher level brawl or riot, and there was a pretty decent brawl, puts innocent people in danger, including the security guards, including the people that bought tickets. That's why what Conor did was so bad, because he put fighters in danger and he literally injured fighters with the dolly attack. And that's why what Nurmagomedov did isn't really excusable. So we have those two things, Jason, but then it comes to the consequence. What is the consequence for Nurmagomedov? And not only him, but at some point, we got to talk about Conor, what Conor did too, because there were other camera angles where that was at. But the thing is, I don't even know if I would advocate for a severe consequence, despite what I just said, despite acknowledging that. Because the worst part about this whole thing is, Jason, I really want to see Nurmagomedov fight again. I really want to see Conor fight again. I feel like not seeing either one of them fight for a year would be sad. But the sport did appear to go off the rails on Saturday night, and potentially a statement should be made to prevent other people from doing this.
Before we get into what the consequences could be for both fighters, you know, first off, if someone told Khabib, if that was someone in his camp who told him to go out and make that exact statement, Khabib, you need to fire that person, because that was horrendous what he said. And that's going to be, and I'm telling you right now, that 2 minute and 40 minute clip going to be used against him when he goes in front of the Nevada Athletic Commission. So if someone inside Team Khabib told him to go out there and say, why are people talking about this, blaming the media, Khabib, you need to fire that person straight up. And by the way, Khabib, you need to hire a good lawyer, because you're going to need one based on this, on what you're going to have to face here. First off, you know, blaming the media, what? The media is just going to report on things that happened. And when I listen to Khabib, I don't think I walk away from that clip going, this is a guy who doesn't understand his actions are what caused this melee. I mean, yes, Connor, you look at what happened there, and we'll get into that in a second. He also talks about how MMA is a respect sport. Daniel, it's a mixture to me. It's a respect sport, it's trash-talking sport, and it's an entertainment sport. Because at the end of the day, if people aren't entertained, they're not putting down $65 to watch you fight.
Well, you know what pisses me off, Jason? One of the things that really pisses me off just as a human being is these people who don't live in reality, who have these opinions and these ideas and they're not based in fact or like things that have actually happened. And in that quote, he talks about how mixed martial arts has changed into a sport where in trash talk. Nurmagomedov, what are you talking about? This sport since its inception has been a freaking circus. Tito and Ken Shamrock, and even prior to that, I'm sure you could find Gerard Gordeaux talking crap to Taylor Tooley. The idea that this sport has not always been about showmanship, about trash talking, about prize fighting, about getting money, creating money. The idea that it has changed due to influence from the media is such a BS backwards idea. It showcases Nurmagomedov's inability to grapple with reality. And I understand he comes from a different world, and I understand that for him, trash talking may be personal, but that is separate from the fact that it's clear he is talking about something that isn't actually reality. He kind of lives in this weird fantasy where he's going to be this guy that changes the sport in his own worldview, and I think he's got to understand that that's just not going to happen. And so, again, the worst part is – the more I listen to Nurmagomedov's post-fight quotes and his inability to take ownership over choosing to jump over the cage and do a brogue kick into the crowd, the more I listen to him talk about it, the less sympathetic I get for him. I was more sympathetic without hearing him say a word after the brawl. So it's like, Jesus, Khabib, like, you know, learn how to take responsibility. You talk about martial arts. Isn't one of the key points of martial arts discipline? Have some type of discipline and chill out after you win the fight.
Well, it's like when I woke up Sunday morning and I see this article on MMA Junkie about Ali Abdelaziz calling Conor McGregor a horrible person. And I read through this article and I'm just like, does Team Khabib not understand that they are the cause of a lot of this? You know, and let's take a more recent experience of trash talking, going across the line. Anderson Silva, Chael Sonnen. Look how Anderson Silva handled himself post fight. Very respectful, you know, and all of a sudden this happened. And then when, you know, Khabib's like yelling at Dana White, and look, first off, Dana White handled himself amazing on Saturday night in the cage. Absolutely the correct decision not to put Khabib on the belt. Khabib's like, put my belt around me. It's like, no, Khabib, you don't understand. You're putting other people in danger. And when I hear his statement, that's why I think that at that moment, he did not understand that he was putting other people in danger. You know, just for, you know, someone starts throwing stuff inside the cage, you've got, you know, commission workers, you know, various people in there that, you know, and that to me is the thing is, I mean, look, and Connor is no saint. Let's not sit back and act like Connor is saying this at all. It's there's so many factors of this, but, you know, and I was thinking, he keeps talking about how Connor disrespected his religion. How did he disrespect it? Is it because of him offering him a drink?
That, I'll be honest with you, that one I don't know. Maybe there's a quote out there that I missed, and there might be. There might be, I don't know, because I mean, there was a lot of trash talk. Maybe he did say something, but that is one thing where I've just kind of accepted that Connor said something about his religion, but I actually don't know what quote he's talking about.
I mean, in terms of Connor going after his father, let's put the facts out there. Khabib's father could not get a visa to get into the United States. That should tell us something.
Yeah. Yeah, probably. I mean, you're probably right, but Jesus, I mean, I will say, like, there's been a lot of guys who haven't been able to get visas to get in the United States, including, like, pro wrestlers that I know, and it's, like, it's kind of a hard process. So maybe I don't know if, like, can't get visa in the United States should really be this guilt thing because, you know, it could be something not awful. It could be something bad. So that one, I'm not going to, like, sake, I mean, maybe just don't talk about crap about somebody's father. Like, probably don't do that, you know. But I can understand why Khabib would get emotional. But again, it's like it's trash talk. Even if it's crossed the line, doesn't excuse what happened. But just I want to make one point clear, and that Connor is not a victim in this specific situation, because like video came out, and the reason why he obviously, I mean, he probably wouldn't have pressed charges anyway, because that's kind of how Connor rolls. You know, he's kind of cool like that. But the reason why he for sure didn't press charges is because, I mean, you saw the clip, right, of the phone camera where Khabib jumps outside of the cage. Connor jumps on the cage. One of Nurmagomedov's coaches, I think, jumps on the cage, and Connor punches him. I mean, you saw that, right?
I saw where the guy came in and confronted him, which I'll say this. You've got Islam Makhachev, and I'm not going to try to butcher the other guy's name. You know, I hope that was worth it to you because you just lost your jobs in the UFC.
Well, no, yeah, that happened. But again, we have to point out what Connor did. What Connor did, he was on the cage and he punched Nurmagomedov's coach first, unprompted.
Look,
that did happen.
There's no sane in this, but let's be real about it. Khabib doesn't jump out, none of this happens.
And
that to me, is where, and here's the other thing. And the Nevada State Athletic Commission answers to the governor of Nevada, Governor Sandoval, who was in attendance on Saturday night. And Dana White said the governor ran out of the building when all this was going on. So the governor
sounds like a weirdo. Like, oh, I gotta run out. Like, I hate politics.
Well, you gotta imagine he was probably like in the front row.
Yeah, I guess. What a
so, coward. but this is, and you mentioned about the consequences, and of course, Nevada's already come out saying that there will be complaints filed against Khabib and also Conor McGregor. In terms of the Khabib, and I thought Shel Sonnen laid this out perfectly on his YouTube channel, best case scenario for Khabib is a 10% fine and a 6-month suspension. Now, the likelihood is he wouldn't be fighting the next 6 months anyway. 10% fine, we're talking $200,000. That might be more money he's ever made in a UFC fight total, or close to it. I think I wouldn't be surprised if it's more like a 20% fine, community service, and a 9-month suspension.
Yeah, that's interesting. That seems like I feel like it's 9 months. Anything less than 9 months would communicate to fans it's a slap on the wrist. I think a 6-month suspension would communicate to fans that. It is in fact a slap on the wrist. It wouldn't necessarily be rewarded to them, to those that, I mean, especially because like this was a fight where you had two ardent fan bases, the Conor fan base and the anti Conor fan base, or the Nurmagomedov fan base. And everyone in the Conor fan base like uses incredibly to pile up on Nurmagomedov. So they want blood, like they want to see this guy suspended for a year. And I kind of hope that doesn't happen. Personally, I would rather him just get suspended for 6 months. I think anything more than 10% fine would be, I don't know. I just really hate it when states take away money from the fighters. I really do. And the thing is, like, I don't know why. I mean, the reason why I hate it is where the money goes to be honest with you. I think if it went to like a nonprofit organization, I'd feel good about it. I don't know. It just makes me feel gross. But again, like let's not like there was an underlying theme here that troubled me. Like I wanted to come out here and I want to be hard on Nurmagomedov because he instigated this whole thing. But one underlying thing I do want to hit on here is, man, let's not forget about Connor here, because this does seem like a situation where, from the way it was covered on the broadcast to a lot of the social media coverage, it does seem like Connor is really giving the benefit of the doubt. And when you do go back to the incident of him jumping the cage in Bellator, the Dolly attack, I mean, this is a guy who's committed just as many sins as Nurmagomedov, and he didn't really receive any punishment whatsoever, I thought, from the UFC. Or an athletic commission, right?
Well, you look at the Bellator aspect, you look at the Dolly incident, that's not regulated by a commission. You know, the commission couldn't go after him after what happened with the Bellator incident. You know, and that's the whole thing is suspension. This isn't like the NFL. I mean, they could sit there and say, hey, Connor, we're going to suspend you 6 months. He goes, well, I wasn't going to fight Nick 6 months anyway, so it's not really a suspension. I mean, it's a totally different thing. And look, Connor's not saying this at all. Obviously, his actions led to all this, but I think my biggest issue is when I hear Khabib talk, I want to believe he's sincere. I can't believe it because you listen to him talk. And yes, that was in the moment, and emotions got to him. It got to the best of him. I get all that. But you never heard him understand that his actions is what causes. And you hear his manager's comments. It's just, I think that, look, 10% and 6 months has got to be the absolute best-case scenario for Khabib right now. Absolute best-case scenario. But, man, you better have a good lawyer.
Yeah, he better do it because the thing is it's a lot of money this dude's playing with because this event drew a lot of money. I mean, this event in and of itself, the fight card was phenomenal. And this moment, as black as it may feel currently, it is something that with time is going to age as one of those historic moments, brawl.
But we both know this is a bad moment. This is a,
in the moment, yes,
because
it's a bad moment.
We both know. I mean, look, when it comes to that hardcore MMA fan base, this does not deter their opinion whatsoever. But for people who tune in on Saturday night that are just, sports fans, knew this was a big sports event, that, may have a perception on what an MMA fighter is, that this doesn't help that perception.
This doesn't help that perception. But I will say this point blank. Based on all the combat sports I've watched, all the history, it's all about making money. And point blank, I think the brawl after made both fighters more money in a rematch than had the brawl not happen.
Oh, God. And by the way, folks, the rematch is going to happen at some point.
It's probably going to be the next fight for both guys. Tony Ferguson probably got screwed.
Ooh, man, I tell you, I mean, look, from a money aspect, yeah, it's got to be if you're going to do this from a money aspect, yeah, it's the next fight. But I almost feel like you need to kind of work your way back to this. Like another year from now, 18 months from now is really when you do that fight. But the unfortunate thing, and you highlighted there, this incident took away for how great of a night it was from a fight aspect. It was an unbelievable night. I mean, Pettis Ferguson was a tremendous fight. I mean, Tony Ferguson bloody, Anthony Pettis all bloody. Gotta praise Duke Rufus because he is in the 1% of head coaches that would stop the fight. We both know a majority of coaches would send him out there.
Every time a coach does this, we need to praise him, right? We need to be like, good job, coach. You are awesome because for the love of God, you should not go out to a third round against Tony Ferguson with a broken hand. That is a death sentence. And so thank God Duke Rufus called it. It was sad because holy moly, this was one of the best fights I've seen for two rounds. Like watching Ferguson versus Anthony Pettis, like there were so many amazing things about this fight. One, the fight itself was amazing. The fight itself made me think, man, there are a few things in the world better than watching a great fight live. Like as it's happening live, unfolding in front of your eyes, this is magical. Another insane thing about this whole fight is the fact that apparently Tony Ferguson just didn't do rehab. I wasn't aware of that. I wasn't aware that he just like got out of the surgery bed and started doing his caveman. By the way, despite the fact that he won this fight against a top tier fighter, watching him fight, it sure as hell looked like he didn't do rehab. It looked like he took rehab into his own hands the way he was moving inside the cage. Tony Ferguson, I learned after Saturday night, is an absolute wild man.
Dude, I mean, when he was talking about the whole his rehab process, it was amazing. But if people have not seen his post-fight press conference, it was absolutely hilarious. I mean, just sit there and just listen to what this guy has to say. I mean, he should be next up. I mean, obviously, it's a waiting game at this point of what is going to go out there. But, man, one to praise Duke Rufus because there's just not a lot of coaches that would go out there and do that. But let's be honest about it. The real highlight of the night is our national treasure, Derek Lewis, who for about 4 minutes and, 35 seconds, really didn't do much. And then, oh, my God, lands that right hand. It's all over. And then, when I talk about my three under-the-radar stars for this fight card, one's Duke Rufus, Two is Dana White for how he handled, not putting the belt on Khabib. And number three is Joe Rogan. And the reason for that is how he handled this post-fight press conference or post-fight interview with Derek Lewis, where Derek Lewis talks about his balls are hot in terms of why he took his shorts off. And, of course, we now know Derek Lewis is going to be fighting for the heavyweight title, which me and Daniel are definitely in agreement on this one, is if he doesn't have that post-fight interview the way it goes down, I don't think he is fighting for the title November 3rd.
Oh, dude, completely no. Like Derek Lewis became a star because of the amount of eyeballs on the pay-per-view and how funny his post-fight interview is. Bar none. He became a star. By the way, that card needed that fight, given what happened with Diaz and Poirier. Jesus. Yeah, Joe Rogan, great under-the-radar star you recognize there, because very few people could have helped that interview be as funny as it was, like Joe Rogan. This is a guy who's obviously a top-notch comedian, very flexible guy. You know, you can look at every fighter in the history of the UFC. No single person, I think, is more comfortable inside the octagon than Joe Rogan. He's been in it so much. In those post-fight interviews, it's just like a day in the park for him. So, yeah, if you had somebody who is kind of stiff on the interview or not flexible, wouldn't be as funny. That was funny. That was a great win for Derek Lewis, by the way. I mean, Alexander Volkov, kind of impressive in that fight. Early on, it's kind of funny. The way Derek Lewis defends, it makes you think he's about to get finished. Like, the way he defends throughout fights. Like, whenever he gets tagged, he, like, immediately, like, turtles up and, like, runs away. And it makes you think the fight's about to be over. But he just survives. It's a very interesting defensive strategy. But then he eventually finished Volkov. I mean, that's the one danger Lewis presents. You put him up against a fighter who's more skilled than him. Dude still can knock you out in any round. And he can absolutely do it against DC in the fifth round. Imagine if that happened. So what I will say is this. Derek Lewis, I've never seen someone get over this way. I've always seen people get over by like talking smack or talking about how they're the greatest. But I actually have never seen an MMA star get this popular based on being funny. I've never seen that happen before, and by God, my balls were hot. And then saying you're not ready for a heavyweight title shot, I loved it.
Oh, and I always talk about how Derek Lewis is a national treasure, and this was Derek Lewis on the post-fight show on FS1.
Derek, I have to ask, because in the past, it's been a cheese plate with some wine and your pinky up. How do you celebrate the victory over Volkov?
Probably just going to go home, throw my wife's legs up in the air and see what goes from there.
You know what? We can always expect something great from my man, Derek Lewis.
Oh, yeah.
Delivering on us TV
with the lines.
Hey, you're a married man. It is what it is, you know?
National treasure, Derek Lewis. That's what he is. I mean, look, could you imagine if somehow he beats Daniel Cormier in 4 weeks from now?
Well, no.
It's not happening. I think I saw he's already like a 9-1 underdog, 8-1, 9-1 underdog. I mean, yeah. Look, puncher's chance, but I don't see Daniel Cormier sitting there and wanting to have a striking matchup. I think Daniel Cormier goes in, double legs him, and beats him up on the ground.
Look, if the UFC was a video game and there was like a fact sheet for how to take out Derek Lewis, it'd be like his weakness is his belly, right? Like DC is gonna attack the crap out of Lewis's stomach. That's going to get ugly. Again, you look at the entire heavyweight division, the word puncher's chance does not ring more true than it does with Derek Lewis. So that is something to keep in mind in any fight. He has the greatest puncher's chance because his fist can generate an incredible amount of power. I just want to put this in stone, Jason. This is what I think is going to happen. I think Derek Lewis pulls out. I think John Jones steps up. I think it's Jones versus DC. And then I also texted this to you. I think after the DC Jones fight, DC retires, and then for the heavyweight title, Derek Lewis, Brock Lesnar, Derek Lewis is your new champion. I just want to put this on record right now so I sound like Nostradamus.
This could be a great scenario for DC. Okay, so we all expect him to go through and get an easy victory against Derek Lewis. So then he comes back like February, March-ish. He fights Brock Lesnar, okay? We all expect he beats Brock Lesnar. Jones fights Gustafsson in December, January-ish, and then we are talking summer Jones DC trilogy. Like, in terms of maximizing your bank account, this is working out beautifully for Daniel Cormier.
Yeah. Yeah, just wait until Gustafsson beats Jones.
Or wait till Lesnar goes, nah, I want to fight John Jones.
Yeah, that too. I mean, Lesnar's stubborn. He really is. And that's probably why Lewis DC is happening. But again, I just want to point out that I just feel like something's crazy is going to happen. And I'm not talking about, I don't know, just when shows like that happen, just crazy stuff happens. And we've already seen craziness between Eubanks getting the title shot revoked and Diaz Poirier getting made for the 165-pound title. And then that fights off. That title, it was never existed. Lewis Cormier, I just think this has all the makings of a late pullout from Lewis and John Jones stepping up.
I love every time Dana White goes, we're never making 165-pound weight class. And I'm like, okay, wait till Conor McGregor says I'm only fighting if it's a 165-pound title fight. Oh, we're starting a 165-pound division. Look, we all know this one's coming. Save 100%. All those clips of Dana White saying that. And when we have a 165-pound title fight of Nate Diaz, Conor McGregor, that we all know that's going to happen. But in terms of the rest of the night, great night of fights, Dom Reyes, you talked about passing the test. It's a decision win. But let's really call it what it was. That was a knockout win. Michelle Waterson, solid win from her. I didn't see her winning all three rounds. I had 29-28, but definitely a win for Michelle Waterson. Joseph Formiga beat Sergio Pettis. Duke Rufus saying Sergio's going to go back up to 135 pounds. Vicente Luque, man, what a devastating knockout he had over Jalen Turner. Aspen Ladd, she looked great against Tanya Evinger. Scott Holtzman pulls off the third round knockout against Alan Patrick. Yana Kunaskayev gets a win over Lena Landsberg. Nick Lentz and Tony Martin both having TKO wins. It was just ultimately a great night of fights. What really stuck out to you?
I thought Dom Reyes certainly passed the test. I mean, this was his toughest opponent in OSP. He went out and won. But to me, the most impressive performance on the entire card would probably be, even though it was probably the biggest mismatch, I just thought Vicente Luque looked amazing in his welterweight fight. So that's the guy. But again, that entire prelim was littered with impressive performances from Luque to Holtzman to Aspen Ladd to Nick Lentz to Tony Martin. But the one in particular, the guy who I'm thinking about the most this week is Vicente Luque, the way he handled Jalen Turner.
Yeah, man, what a great performance by him. And, of course, Jalen Turner is on fight night, he did look like a welterweight, but he's actually a 155-pound fighter. He is, sounds like, going to go down to 155 pounds. Of course, that is UFC 229. We're going to talk about Bellator 207 and 208 here momentarily, but I want to let you know this episode of the MMA Report podcast is brought to you by Roman. Guys, we are terrible at taking care of our health. We all know it. Whether it's a knee injury, bad back, something worse. Guys, we're usually more comfortable with just rubbing some dirt on it than seeing a doctor. Look, I'm guilty of it myself. I had to go get some dental work done recently. That's the last thing I want to do, but I had to get it done. The same is true for erectile dysfunction. Studies show 70% of guys who experience ED don't get treated for it. Thankfully, Roman created an easy way to get checked out by a doctor and get treated for ED online.
Roman is a one-stop shop where licensed U.S. physicians can diagnose ED and ship medication right to your door. With Roman, there are no waiting rooms, no awkward face-to-face conversations, or uncomfortable trips to the pharmacy. You can handle everything discreetly online, and all you have to do is visit GetRoman.com/MMAReport, fill out a brief medical onboarding, chat with a doctor, and get FDA-approved ED meds delivered to your door in discreet, unmarked packaging. Guys, you got to go online, get checked by the doctor. Erectile dysfunction is a problem that guys don't tackle, but with Roman, it's really easy, so take care of it.
For a free online visit, go to GetRoman.com/MMAReport. Once again, that's GetRoman.com/MMAReport. That's GetRoman.com/MMAReport for a free online visit. GetRoman.com/MMAReport. And coming up this weekend, it is Bellator 207, 208, Friday night up in Connecticut, Saturday up in New York. Of course, this is the semifinals of the Bellator Heavyweight Grand Prix. On Friday night, we have Matt Mitrione against Ryan Bader. And then on Saturday, we have Fedor against Chael Sonnen. In terms of what fight interests you more? Is it wrong of me to say Mitrione Bader?
It's not, because I think that fight could theoretically be the final of the tournament. those two guys might be the best two heavyweights in the tournament, and that's probably who I would go at. But the reason why I'm more interested in Fedor and Sonnen and Jason is nostalgic reasons, sentimental reasons. I really grew up thinking Fedor was the greatest fighter of all time. So every time he does fight, I treat it as an experience. And the idea of watching him make it to the finals against a guy in Shale who really knows how to sell a fight and is a star, obviously, in his own right, that's why I'm more attracted to Fedor Sonnen, the story of Fedor Emelianenko. But as a mixed martial arts observer, if what you care about is watching the best guys fight in the cage, I understand why you would say Mitrione Bader is the more appetizing fight.
You know, when I look at Mitrione and Bader, and of course, you have made a prediction from the start of this tournament. Your pick was Ryan Bader. My pick was Matt Mitrione. But after seeing how Matt's opening round matchup went in this tournament against Roy Nelson and Ryan Bader's style, I can't see Ryan Bader sitting there and just striking with Matt Mitrione. You got to imagine he's double legging this thing to the ground and just, you know, I'm picking Ryan Bader.
You have seen the light. You have
seen
the light.
I've seen the light, yes.
Or you're going with the old MMA report versus Jinx when we both pick a guy and he loses. I mean, look, Mitrione, God, this is a great fight. It really is. I mean, these main events, we're really looking forward to them because obviously we've seen what Mitrione does when he's firing in all cylinders. And the fact that he's just always dangerous in a fight, even after he gets knocked down a bit. So Bader's got to be cautious of Mitrione's ability to finish a fight, for sure. But from a technical standpoint and from, like, which guy do I think is more likely to initiate his game plan, I think it's Ryan Bader, for sure. And that's why he's my pick as well.
When I look at the rest of this Bellator 207 main card, man, there is not – you know, you get Nelson and Kara Tonoff, you know, see what happens there. Lorenz Larkin – taking on Ian Pascal, of course. Pascal, a late replacement to take on Lorenz Larkin. We've got Baby Slice taking against Corey Browning, and also Carrington Banks taking on Mandel Nalo. I'll be honest with you, the Banks-Mandel fight is probably my second number two fight on this card on Friday night.
It's a great fight. It really is. My number two fight is probably Nelson Karatanov. But, like, you know, that's just because, like, I like Roy Nelson and Karatanov's a fine opponent. But Banks, Mandel, I mean, that means more for the future of the sport. Like, both these guys have much more upside. Both these guys are competitive. And that's a good fight. I mean, the Baby Slice fight, I have no interest in it. I think Lorenz Larkin is going to be real successful against Ian. And that's why, you know, that fight's not particularly interesting. Like, even the Eric Silva-Lorenz Larkin fight didn't really do it for me. But Banks, Mandel is a good fight, Jason, for sure. I mean, this main card really is lacking. It's a back-to-reality moment after we had that stacked Bellator 206 card. We're like, Bellator's on the rise, which they are. They're going to take over the UFC, which they're not because of main cards like this. But Nelson Karatanov, that does it for me. I'm getting real nostalgic for the old heavyweights this weekend. And Nelson and Sergey, I'm kind of excited for that fight. I'm always excited to see what Roy Nelson looks like fight to fight.
Yeah, I will tell you this. If you find a betting line out there on Mike Kimble versus Alex Potts, I've had some people tell me that there's a lot of people counting out Alex Potts in this matchup. So if there's a betting line that gets posted on that fight, it's part of the prelims on Friday night, you might want to take Alex Potts. I think he's going to be a considerable underdog. And I've had some people in the past couple weeks kind of give me a little nugget on that one of don't be shocked if he goes out there. Of course, Saturday night, we've got Fedor and Shel Sonnen. And the rest of the main card, we got Benson Henderson versus Syed Awad, Alexander Shelmenko against Anatoly Tokov. Also, we have Chuck Congo taking on Tim Johnson. Tim Johnson, of course, coming over to Bellator. We have Henry Krause against Andy Main. Of course, you're going to hear from Henry Krause here momentarily. Is anybody picking Shel Sonnen to win this fight?
I don't know. It doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel good to pick Fedor to go down. And the thing is, like, Chael could easily win this fight. Like, he could just go out there and out-wrestle Fedor and score points. I mean, the big issue for Chael, and the reason why I'm picking Fedor, and I think most people are, is the fact that Fedor is really good at jiu-jitsu. And the idea of him on his back for, like, three rounds, I think it just spells like a triangle choke and arm bar.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, what is the path to victory for Shale? Just sit there and, you know, wrestle him to death and do his best to stay out of submissions?
That is his path to victory. And he has used that effectively. He can do it. He can absolutely do it. And that's why this fight is interesting to me when it comes to who the winner is. Because Chael undoubtedly has the ability to control where this fight plays out. He has a path to victory, and that's kind of the dynamic. It's like a race to beat the clock for Sonnen as Fedor attempts to finish this fight. Because I do think Chael will be successful with the wrestling, and if he is, it's going to be about whether or not Fedor can get a finish. Because if Chael's on top for an entire round, for two entire rounds, he's going to win the fight on the points. So that's why this fight's pretty compelling. But it just feels good to pick Fedor. And the reason why is because I do think he is going to catch Chael on the ground with a submission.
I will say this. I like this main card on Saturday much better than I like the main card on Friday. Henderson, Iwad, big matchup. Vincent Henderson talked last week, said this is the last fight of his deal. Shlemenko fight, I think, is a great fight. You know, Johnson, Congo, that doesn't interest me, I'm just being honest. Corrales, I was surprised this matchup. I thought he would have got, you know, somebody of a bigger name in Bellator, but still a great fight here. But for me personally, if you tell me I can watch one or the other, I would prefer to watch Bellator 208 than Bellator 207.
Completely agree with you. Bellator 208 is a better main card than Bellator 207. Theoretically, despite the fact that I was looking forward to Fedor Chael most, the best fight of the weekend is Bader Mitrione. But I think Bellator 208 is a better main card. Again, it's me saying that because Bellator 207 doesn't have a lot that gets me excited, but I feel gross saying Bellator 208 with Chet Congo versus Timothy Johnson on the main card presents a better television option. But it does. Henry Corrales is a real fun featherweight to watch. I agree with you. I mean, this guy's put together three consecutive wins in a row, mostly against high talent guys. And it's like, yeah, Andy Main solid, but maybe not where Corrales should be at right now. But Henderson Iwad is a fight that I'm down for. Watching Shlemenko back against Tokov, I'm cool with. And like you, I agree. Bellator 208 is the marquee card between the two.
Just looking at the betting odds for this one. So we've got tell me which underdog you're taking on Bellator 207. Matt Mitrione, so +250, taking on Bader, -300. Sergey Kharitonov, +250. Roy Nelson, -350. Kevin Ferguson Jr., -750. Corey Browning, +475. Carrington Banks, -270. Amando Nalo, +210. Lorenz Larkin, -700. Ian Pascal, +450. I would take Mandela, +210.
I like it. I would take Corey Browning. I'm just like, you know, if you can bet against prospects that aren't proven, do it. And with odds like that, I'm going to do it blindly. But yeah, Mandela, I mean, that's a great fight. I could absolutely see him win. But when the odds are that wide, I'll put some money on Corey Browning.
Interesting. Shlemenko's an underdog right now as we're doing the show, +120 on Saturday night. Benson Henderson, man, -470. That's a big line. Kind of like that side of Wad +345, even though I think Benson's going to win the fight. And I'm honestly surprised Fedor's not a bigger favorite than -265.
I think it's hard to go with Fedor against it. I don't know what to even classify Chael as. Like, I was going to say like a top heavyweight, but Chael isn't. Like, he's a guy who's good, sort of. And it's hard after the lows we've seen Fedor go to in his career, and he's bounced back from those lows, to go like anything higher than like a 300 favorite against a guy who has showcased a high degree of skill in the sport.
Yeah, we'll see how that all goes down on Friday and Saturday night. Speaking of Bellator 208, you're going to hear from one of those fighters next. That's Henry Corrales, of course, taking on Andy Main. I had a chance to catch up with him and hear my conversation. Also tells a really great story about him and Benson Henderson changing a tire on his car. And then you're going to hear my conversation with Ray Rodriguez, who's going to headline next week's LFA event against Chris Gutierrez. Joining me now here on the MMA Report, a man's going to look for his fourth straight victory comp here, Bellator 208. It is Henry Corrales. Henry, man, as always, I appreciate the time. You know, it's been a while since we saw you back in January. So what's been going on?
What's up, Jason? Thanks for having me. Nothing much, man. Just training, mastering my craft, getting better, getting ready to get in there.
And you know, when the fight offer comes here with Andy, were you a little surprised by this offer?
No, actually, I was so excited to fight on this card because my teammate Benson Henderson is fighting on this card. So I was just scratching and clawing my way on this card for like months now, dude. Like, dude, get me on this card. Let's go. And then finally, you know, they offered me the fight, and you know, I didn't really care who it was. I was just like, fuck yeah, let's fucking go.
Obviously, there's a lot of tension right now on your division. We've got the title fight coming up here next month, with Pitbull and Sanchez. I guess finally a new title challenger here at 145 pounds. Of course, you're familiar with both those guys. I'm sure you are watching Bellator 206. Aaron Pico becoming a name in this division. As you sat back here over the last 8 months and looking how 45 has played out, what's really stuck out to you about the division?
Nothing really, just the same old, dude. Like, dude, all these guys are tough. If it's not them, it's going to be somebody else, you know? All these guys are tough. So, it's not too much to worry about them. You know, I'm just always trying to, you know, better myself and, you know, be the best I can be. So that's mostly what my focus is on.
So in terms of everyone's tough in this division, what makes Andy tough?
He has some slick jiu-jitsu, black belt. He has some, you know, he has some jiu-jitsu credentials, and he has a nice record, and it's tall, lanky, and he stepped up to the plate. So let's give him a good fight.
Do you ever take it personal when a guy signs a contract? That you know, do you take that like, hey man, this guy actually thinks he can beat me?
Yeah, I think it's personal with anybody, you know, not just him personally, but just the fact that, you know, I'm literally fighting for my future. You know, I'm fighting for two checks. I'm fighting for one check. So it's super personal for me, you know, and I'm willing to do whatever it takes to get in there and win.
Had a chance to have one of your coaches, Eddie Chow, on the show recently. And of course,
nice.
We've talked about Eddie, how he's ultimately the reason you ended up in Arizona. You know, and yeah. He kind of talked about, you know, his striking style and how he tries to teach all the athletes there at the MMA lab. How would you say Eddie has taking your game to another level from, you know, January to now?
Dude, well, I was, I think I was like 10-0 when I started training with Eddie, and like eight wins by submission. So I was just a ground guy, you know? And so he's helped me bring my hands up to par and everything else. So I'm just super grateful to have him in my corner.
Are you at all, I mean, do you kind of sit back and think about those early days of your fighting career and think about where you're at skill-wise now and kind of just think, wow, man, what if I would have had these skills back then?
Yeah, a little bit. But, you know, there's so much going on right now in the present moment that it's just kind of like it would be like a waste of energy to think too much into it. But, yeah, I'm very happy with how far I've come and where I'm going, that's for sure.
2011 was the pro debut. You got a submission win against Emilio Gonzalez. If you could give that Henry Corrales any advice of stuff you know now, what would that advice be?
Just stay at it and be persistent, you know, and be super present with all your training. Just simple, basic shit.
And, you know, you get a win here. That'll be four in a row. And obviously we've talked about, you know, the murderer's row that you had to start your Bellator run and to where you're at now. I mean, where is your place right now in this division, do you think?
Yeah, well, for me, dude, you know, my biggest thing is, you know, since, you know, I took a couple losses and since I've been at the MMA lab, this will be four wins in a row for me. You know, new family, new team. And, so I'm just a completely different fighter, you know, for the most part. My wrestling's fucking definitely up to par. You know, my striking's gotten better. My conditioning, I'm just an all-around better fighter in person. So, you know, there's always, you know, I got vengeance on my mind because, you know, these guys beat me and didn't get the best, and I wasn't my best self. So it'd be nice to get back in there and mix it up with those guys. But, you know, like you're talking about Aaron Pico and all these up-and-coming fighters too, they could get it too, you know. I got some for everybody.
I mean, Pico, McKee, there is this next wave of guys.
Whoever, dude.
I mean, obviously, AJ just had that great win, and I was surprised in the manner that he got the win. When you sat back and watched that fight, did that surprise you in how that fight went down?
No. Yeah, nothing in this game surprises me, man. You know, but it's definitely impressive to fucking steamroll somebody like that. But at the same time, like, you still really didn't see much, you know, there wasn't much going on. It was just like some scramble, some quick shit going down. So very impressive for him to do that. But, you know, like what? There's still, we didn't still get a good look at him. You know what I mean?
What impresses you when you watch a fight?
That dude, stuff like that impresses me. Finishes. And I like dudes. I like dudes that fight, you know, I like dudes who bring the heat. And, that's pretty impressive. What doesn't impress me is, you know, when dudes like, you know, dudes stall and just try to like win on points and things like that. That's just kind of, it's just kind of weak.
This card headlined by Fedor and Shale. Do you remember the first time you saw a Fedor fight?
Yeah, dude, big time, dude. Pride. Those were the fights back in the day that really got me into the sport, you know. And he's a legend, you know, but for me, in my eyes, you know, the real legend on the card is Benson Henderson. That's my dog, dude. That's my brother, dude. That's my teammate. And he's a legend in my eyes, not only for his, you know, UFC credentials and his credentials that he's about to accomplish with Bellator, but just the type of fucking person he is. He's just an all around high quality dude across the board. And man, I'm just super pumped, man, to fight on the same card as him and train, sweat alongside of him, bleed alongside of him. And this one's pretty deep, dude. This one's special for me, dude, across the board.
Do you remember the first time you met Benson, and was it immediately like you got this sense of like, man, this guy's a different dude?
Dude, all right, so fucking, I've trained at the lab a couple times, and he's just all super intense, and he's pumped, and he just works hard. And I go out to my car. This was like when I first came out here, like 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago, and I was changing my tire, dude. And I'm such a retard with like changing tires. I didn't really know how to. I was just kind of frustrated with it. And he pulls over in his Escalade, and it's 120 degrees in Phoenix, and he's getting out, and he's just sweating with me, dude. He could have just drove by. A bunch of other guys just drove by, and they're like, "Fuck, that sucks." But he stopped, and he didn't really know what he was doing either, because my car at the time was just kind of like a little, just giving us a little headache, dude. And he just stood there with me for 15, 20 minutes, and just, you know, we both just figured it out and changed the tire together. And I was just like, "Damn, I'm fucking sold with this guy, dude. This guy's awesome." He didn't have to do that, you know.
Now, could you actually train with a toothpick in your mouth like he does?
No, dude, he's a wild man.
I think about it. I'm like, man, how does that thing not move around your mouth?
Yeah, he's crazy, dude.
I mean, is that one of the craziest things you see in the gym? Is somebody in there with a toothpick?
That's pretty wild, dude. I've never thought about this, but when you just said it right now, I'm like, dude, that might have some benefit because it makes you keep your mouth closed to hold it in place. Never thought about that.
Yeah, I didn't think about it that way. Crazy. It seems like it's every time he fights now, it's like it's toothpick gate. Does Benson have the toothpick in or not? Like, I would say, I mean, I wonder if that's like a superstitious thing at this point with him. I mean, do you have any of those superstitious things like on fight day? Like you have to do certain things a certain way?
Oh, man, I like to take a nap in the back. I've done that my last three fights. And so that's like my new thing. I have to lay down, take a little nap, and just chill.
So key to victory number one in this fight is take a nap backstage, and then go through your workout.
Hell yeah!
And of course, we're all going to be able to see this. Of course, this will be live on the Paramount Network from New York. It is Bellator 208. Henry, man, as always, I appreciate time and look forward to seeing your fight. And of course, let everyone know where they can follow you out on social media.
For having me, Jason, and you can find me on Instagram at Henry Corrales MMA.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report, a man's gonna step back into the cage, first time in a long time since we've seen him since last December. Ray Rodriguez, Ray, man, I appreciate the time. December 1, 2017, last time we saw you inside competition. So, how would you say the last 10?
It's been a little bit of a roller coaster, man. Like you said, I haven't fought since December 1st. I was supposed to get a fight on in the middle of March, but couldn't find an opponent. We did find an opponent. They pulled out, found another opponent. They pulled out, man, so we weren't able to get that fight. Then fast forward a couple months, we were looking at the contender series, man. We didn't have a contract or anything, but we were like, you know what? Let's be in shape. Let's get in training camp right now. That way, if we get the call, we'll be ready to rock and roll. Unfortunately, I suffered a little bit of a shoulder injury, and I had to take some time off before I was able to get back to training. So September. So now we're getting ready for another fight in September. We get an opponent. He pulls out. We still have another, I don't know, maybe 6-7 weeks before the fight comes. We find another opponent. He's a veteran, some guy from Mexico, and he's fought some tough guys. So I'm like, hey, this guy's going to stick. In training camp for that. And about 10 days before the fight, or maybe about 2 weeks before the fight, promoter contacts me and they're like, hey, man, we can't get in touch with this guy anymore. He stopped answering messages. He's not responding to any of our phone calls or anything. So that fight got scrapped. So I reached out to Colin. I was like, listen, man, I know you guys are coming to Belton. I was stationed in Fort Hood for 3 years. So Belton's about maybe like 20 minutes south of Fort Hood. So I was like, let's get me on this card, man. If you have anybody, I'm ready to go. Let's do it. You know? So he's like, all right, I'll try to find you an opponent. That evening, my manager contacted me. He was like, what do you think about Chris Gutierrez? And I was like, absolutely, man. Let's do it, man. It's a good fight. The guy's tough, but, there's nothing he's going to do to be able to get the W that night, man. So it's a good matchup and I'm excited for it.
I mean, I think when people hear Chris Gutierrez, I mean, if they follow all of MMA, probably a name that maybe at first maybe doesn't catch their eye, but then they think about his fights in the World Series of Fighting with Timur Valiyev. He had that split decision win and ultimately got that loss, but he's won back-to-back fights. You know, so as you've gotten ready for this fight, do you see a different guy now than as opposed to the guy that fought Valiyev those two times?
I'm not sure, man. I've seen his last couple fights. I know he fought Jimmy Flick a little while ago. I know he fought Valiyev twice, man. I know that first time I didn't see the whole fight, but from what I heard, it was a very, very controversial decision, right? So which is obviously the reason they fought again. And I hope not, man. I hope he comes in tip-top shape. I hope it's the best Chris Gutierrez he's ever showcased, man, because I don't care what he's coming with. We're coming home with that W. So I hope so. I hope he's the same Chris Gutierrez. I think he started off on an 8-fight winning streak, and I hope he brings that game, man. He's fought some tough guys, but he's never fought anyone on the same caliber as me, striking-wise, jiu-jitsu, wrestling, any of the categories, man. So I don't care what he comes with, man. We're coming home with that W.
Of course, speaking of 8-fight winning streaks, that's what you're currently on. 6 of those 8 have come by stoppage, including that win at the Combate show back in December of last year. You know, we'll get more on Chris here in a moment, but I know you recently started your own gym. So kind of what made you decide that you wanted to get in the gym business?
Well, me and one of my best friends, man, Travis Windhorst, we had been talking about it for a little while, and about 8 months, I was getting ready to graduate from UIW with my bachelor's degree. And I talked to him and I was like, let's do this, man. Like if we're going to move forward, let's set it, let's put this in stone and let's make things happen. And it's been a blessing, man. We've had tremendous feedback from San Antonio. We're on the south side of San Antonio. Obviously San Antonio's a humongous, humongous city. So even on the south side, we get a lot of positive feedback from the students, a lot of our people just competed this weekend. We had about 15 competitors on our first tournament. And out of 18 schools, we placed 4th. So we're doing really good, man. And I'm just excited for the opportunity. It's another big long-term goal of mine. And the next one's the UFC, man. And this year, my goals were to get my bachelor's degree, open my own academy, and the last one's the UFC. So after we get this knockout on October 19th, I'm sure we'll get that UFC call.
In terms of opening up your own academy, what's been the hardest part for you? Is it, or maybe something that you didn't expect, and maybe good or pro, good or bad, that you're like, it just kind of surprised you as you opened the business?
I would say the biggest con of having our own business, me and my partner Travis, is, I wouldn't call it a con, but maybe some of the stories we hear from the people who come into the gym, you know, obviously we ask them, hey, what's your experience like? And I would say a majority of them come in. They're like, hey, I have 20 street fights. I'm ready to come get my first professional fight. What can you do for me? You know, so we get a lot of that. But other than that, man, it's been amazing. Our kids program is crazy. I think we have 21 kids already read or already signed up in our classes, and our adult program is growing as well. So there's not too many cons other than the randos we get here and there that come in with crazy stories. I had one guy who came in, bro, and he says that that he was a black belt in a Apache Indian, and in order to get his black belt, his sensei, his professor, flew him to Alaska, and he had to come home with a polar bear head. And if he didn't come home with that polar bear head, he wouldn't have received his black belt. So we hear stuff like that all the time, man. And that's one of many stories that I've heard, man. So, I mean, that's probably the downfall of it, but it's comical at the same time.
If someone's watching or listening to this and they're in the San Antonio area, where is the academy located at?
So we're located on the south side of San Antonio. Our address is 610 Southwest Military Drive. We're in a shopping shopping mall. It's called Shopper City Mall. So if you guys are looking to step your jiu-jitsu game up, MMA game up, Muay Thai kickboxing, or if you have any little ones who are striving to be better at jiu-jitsu or just gaining some more confidence in themselves, stop by Ultimate Submission Academy. You won't be disappointed.
Now, in terms of this fight here, coming up, LFA 52, what would you label as the three keys for victory for you in this matchup?
Three keys to victory. One, I would say pressure. So Chris has shown that whenever he gets pressured, he tends to crumble a little bit. You know, he's a phenomenal fighter if you stay at his distance. He has some really dangerous kicks, spinning kicks, calf kicks, and those will only be open to him if we're in that kicking range. So pressure is one. Two, I would say, pressure, man. That's the key to beating him. You know, it's important to stay in his face, you know, and I feel like once he feels our speed and our power, he's not going to be able to deal with it. And not only him, but no one in the 135-pound division. I've been fighting at 145 because it's been hard to find a fight in my weight division, and I feel like there's no one who's going to be able to keep up with my speed, power, and my tenacity.
In terms of that next level offer, UFC, you know, comes, are you a 35 or 45?
35 for sure, man. I'm walking around no more than 153, 154, you know, so the weight cuts, it's easy for me. Like I said, the reason why I had to take these fights at 145 is because I couldn't find a fight at 35, you know, so I went up a little bit and for some reason, we just weren't able to get those fights at bantamweight. So I went to 145. My last fight was at 140, and I wasn't going up because it was hard to make the weight. I just couldn't find a damn opponent at 135.
Well, you do got the opponent here, LFA 52, October the 19th, of course, live on Access TV. Ray, man, as always, I appreciate time, and let everyone know they can follow you out on social.
What's going on, guys? Hey, you can find me on at Ray the Judge on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. I don't have a Snapchat, but you can find me on those other three social media outlets. Like I said, if you guys are ever in the San Antonio area, Ultimate Submission Academy, 610 Southwest Military Drive.
And there was my conversations with Henry Corrales and Ray Rodriguez. Appreciate both those guys taking some time out of their busy schedules to recently talk to me about their upcoming fights. Great story by Henry talking about how Benson helped him change a tire on his car when he had just moved out to Arizona. Of course, Ray Rodriguez, big fight for him. You got to imagine if he wins that LFA fight, probably the next fight would be in the UFC. But let's take let's switch things over to the PFL. Of course, they had an event last week, and like, I wasn't trying to be a dick about it or being sarcastic at all about it. But last Thursday, I text Daniel and I text him a screenshot from Instagram. And I go, hey, did you realize there's a PFL event tomorrow night? Because by God, I had no clue.
I wonder if me neither. And the thing is, like, we talk about PFL on this show. Every time there's a PFL card, we preview it. And we're talking about the quarters and the semifinals of their playoffs. And we did not know when we recorded last week that it was that week. That's bad promotion. When us two aren't aware. Now we're aware of PFL 9. We're aware we did watch PFL 8. Yeah, dude. Holy crap. Did not realize it. And God, it starts off negative. I tell you what. That was not a lot of fun to watch. I didn't really enjoy watching that, the NBCSN broadcast of PFL 8. I hope PFL 9 is much better. But there were a lot of things about that card from like the finish in the Seiler versus Alexandre Almeida semifinal fight where it was a DQ. We're going to talk about it. The scoring system of the quarterfinals, you know, it just was not the greatest show in the world.
Yeah, I mean, for PFL, I mean, and they've got to get the word out. Because, I mean, look, and that's also another reason why you don't do an event the week of a Conor McGregor fight, because no matter what you do, it's just going to get buried, because in terms of MMA websites, you're trying to do things that are going to draw content, and Conor says anything, it's going to draw content. But I was, you know, so it was kind of like, I was like, wow. And then when I looked at the card, I was like, man, you know what? That's a pretty damn good card. I was like, man, this is a really good event they have going on. Unfortunately, didn't get much coverage, you know, but mentioning about the scoring system, and to me, this is a screwed up scoring system. And I pulled this from their rules and reg PDF that's right on their website. You can find it. And this is a tiebreaker in terms of if there is a tie, because remember, when they're doing these, you know, you got to fight two times in one night. Based on the unified rules in May, you can only fight five rounds in one night. So the first, the quarterfinal round is a two-round fight, and the semifinal round is a three-round fight. And this is what it says in the rules. Quote, in the event that a quarterfinal or semifinal round fight ends as a draw, the winner of the first round will advance. If the first round is a draw, this rule applies to the second round, and so forth. If there is still no winner, the judge will determine the winner. For record purposes, the fight will still be recorded as a draw. Daniel, here's where this rule is messed up. So you have a two-round fight. And let's look at Vinny Magalhaes and Rakeem Cleveland. That's happening on Saturday night, okay? The opening round of the light heavyweight tournament. Let's say Vinny Magalhaes wins the first round 10-9. It's a close round, but clearly he won the round. But Rakeem Cleveland comes out and wins 10-8, dominant in the second round. So you're telling me the guy who won a 10-9 round advances on in the tournament? What?
Yeah, dude, it sucks, because it's like, why is the first round more valuable than the second round? It's like, I understand when it comes to tiebreakers, once you get like 8 or 9 deep, then you can start doing irrational tiebreakers. Like the team with the color red wins. You know, once you're trying to like really break a tie, and like it's like the first 6 tiebreakers are draws. But the very first tiebreaker shouldn't be round one is more important than round two. You know, isn't the solution pretty simple? Like, isn't it just you go back to the judges and you say you got to pick a winner? Who's the winner?
How about if there's a 10-8 round that is the number one tiebreaker?
Something like that in concrete is true. But I just think if you just go to the judges' pride rules, like, you know, that also is like, that takes away all scenarios, because 10-8 rounds aren't common.
No. And there actually was 2 fights on this card where
Wait a second, Jason, you're bad at math. If there's a 10-8 round, that guy won the fight.
Well, that would be 19-17. Yeah. Okay. I am bad at math. But still, but still, the thing is, what, you know, we know 2 10-9 rounds cannot be the same.
That wouldn't be 19-17.
But
that would be 19-18.
19-18. But it's still, the point is, should the preference be on? So if one guy goes out and wins the first round 10-9, let's say it's narrow. Mm-hmm. The second round is 10-9 for the other fighter, but it's a wider gap. Why should the first round have preference?
Exactly. The very first tiebreaker shouldn't have a flaw like that.
No, that's clearly I can't do math. That's why I'm in radio and not a mathematician.
Yeah, so that's why I'm like, just go to the judges. Who won this fight?
Exactly. You got to pick one winner. Who is it?
Yeah. Completely agree with you. When you watch a two-round fight and then the tiebreaker is who won the first round, it's demoralizing and it's not fun. And it sucks because you have to do the two-round fight, and when you have guys fight twice in a row, but just watching two-round fights are lackluster. Maybe the solution is you do 2 2.5-round fights, Jason.
I'll tell you, I watched these prelims live, and then I just was so tired I fell asleep. First off, the Jared Rochal fight, good Lord. Oh, my goodness.
Kelvin Tiller?
Oh, yeah. God, he laid on him for 3 or 2 rounds. Oh, my God. It was awful to watch. Mm-hmm. Now the Andre Harrison Popo Bezejov fight, that was a great fight. That was a fight you wanted to see a third round after those two went at it. But it was a good, you know, good night of fights. But you look at their scoring system, I think they've got some issues there. But you know, they have to deal with what the unified rules are. So Josh Copeland, Steven Seiler, Lance Palmer, and Philippe Lienz advance on, and they'll face in the finals of these tournaments coming up here on December the 31st in New York City. Of course, that'll be a part of it. Now, in terms of what's going on this weekend, we've got the light heavyweight and lightweight brackets are taking place. You know, when I look at this lightweight tournament, interesting matchup in the opening round. I would still classify Will Brooks as my favorite to win this tournament, but man, he's got a tough challenge in Rashid Magomedov. You know, when you look at the top half of that bracket, probably Chris Wade would be the guy I would favor.
Yeah, I think Chris Wade probably in that bracket. I think, you know, Johnny Case too. I think it's either those two are going to advance to the final, and then you're looking at. I think Brooks probably wins and advances to the final too. But Brooks is a guy who we've seen fight all over the place. Sometimes he's looked like $1 million, and sometimes he's been real disappointing. And there's a lot of room for error with two fights. With that light heavyweight tournament, you know, I really hope it's more interesting than the heavyweights. I mean, the heavyweight final looks cool because like Copeland and Leans have been exciting throughout the tournament. But with light heavyweights, you look at the favorite, and it's hard for me to come up with one. I mean, I think you look at the winner of Malga Hayes Cleveland as a possible favorite.
Magal Hayes is clearly the favorite to win this thing.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, he's.
But I mean, like, I look at the matchups at the bottom of the bracket: Spoon, O'Connell, Grisham, Rama. Man, any four of those guys could come out of that bracket.
Yeah, and I think it's probably going to be O'Connell. But it could be any of those four guys. Spoon,
he's a great broadcaster, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah, he is. And he's an entertaining fighter. Like, he takes it to the guys. And
I would say Grisham would be my favorite to come out of the bottom of that bracket.
Yeah, I could see that for sure. I hope we get less decisions here, but I think a lot of the lightweight fights are going to go two rounds.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of those fights will go there. But, I mean, look, part of this tournament, you know, especially coming up on Saturday night, a lot of this is luck. You gotta get cleared by the commission after that first fight. And so we'll see what happens there. Let's get into our buy-sell segment, Daniel. Up first, are you buying or selling Conor McGregor's next fights against Nate Diaz?
I'm going to sell it. I am. Just because that's one of the heavy favorites. But, oh, wait, does Conor fight Nate at Madison Square Garden in 3 weeks? Does that happen?
No.
Okay, then. No, I think it's probably going to be Nurmagomedov, dude. Just because it's really hard to get Nate Diaz in the cage for anything. We barely drug him for the Poirier fight. Are you buying or selling that?
I am going to sell it, and you're going to know why here very shortly.
Well, can I throw something at you real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
What, as an MMA fan, when you look up and down the lightweight, the welterweight, the featherweight rankings, I don't know if you want to pull them up, not which one's going to draw more buys. Which fighter would you like to see Conor fight from your pure enjoyment of what would transpire in the cage next? My suggestion would be Conor McGregor versus Justin Gaethje. I would love to see that fight. Is there any fight like that that you would want to see? Like, well, it's never going to happen. But it's like if he were to take maybe a tune-up fight or a non-superstar fight, what fight inside the cage would you want to see Conor in?
At featherweight, Jose Aldo sticks out to me. Maybe Jeremy Stevens. I think that could be a fun fight. At lightweight, Ferguson sticks out to me. I like what you mentioned about Gaethje. How about Edson Barboza? That would be one that sticks out. Welterweight, Stephen Thompson.
Ooh, that would be an interesting fight. I mean, I think we'd finally have an entertaining Conor McGregor fight. I would be down for a Stephen Thompson fight for sure. And then I guess, yeah, I think so. I don't know what else sticks out to me there. But that's a world where you know, Conor takes a tune-up fight. Man, I would like to see Conor versus Darren Till just for the pre-fight hype. But
do that in Europe. You get a good live gate for that one.
Damn right.
Next up, buy or sell, and the UFC books an interim lightweight title fight in the next 6 months.
Okay, so what's your take here?
I say I'm buying this, and we're getting an interim fight of Conor McGregor, Tony Ferguson.
Wow, that's interesting.
Don't at me.
I can see that, but I'm going to sell it, man. I think the next fight is Conor Nurmagomedov too for the lightweight title, and poor Tony. And you know what? Tony, just please don't fight. What I want you to do, Tony, is get healthy as possible and you get the winner because you deserve it. I mean, you deserved a title shot a long time ago. I mean, you even had like a title around your waist. But Tony Ferguson's next fight should be for the lightweight championship. I do think the next one is Conor Nurmagomedov. But the scenario you threw out there could absolutely happen.
All right, our final buy-sell segment is based on something Dominic Cruz had to say in his interview with Errol Hawani last week. I'm going to play you what Dominic Cruz had to say as he talks about kind of his theory on where the 125-pound division is going from here.
But I think what's happening, the fact that they're trying to make a fight with Cejudo tells me one thing, and it's a guess, but they have to be shutting down the 25-pound division. Why would you make a fight with Cejudo to come up? That legitimately will kill the 25-pound division in itself, letting him move up to 35 and possibly win the title. So they got to be setting up to kill that division. That's the only thing I could think of, and that's why they would move me out of the way and try to move Cejudo up, because now you've got to make a case for other 25ers as they move up, because I created the 25-pound division. I beat up so many of them, they made another division for the smaller, shorter, lighter guys. And now those guys are going to come back up because they weren't generating the views. They weren't generating the butts in the seats. They weren't doing anything with the division to grow it. So now they're saying, okay, maybe we'll try killing it. Let's see how Henry does with TJ. Let's see if we can bring this division and make it viable that these guys can fight with the 35ers. That's the only thing I could think of that makes sense why you would not put me in there in that title fight against TJ and you'd put Henry before. Because you got to build that whole 25-pound division and bring us together into 35s, which I have no problem with, and I'll fight somebody in the meantime. But let me get on a card near him so that TJ can't dodge me and try to wait until I fight and then wait 4 months and say, oh, I don't need to fight Dom. I know he's not scared of me, but he doesn't want to fight me either. And I think it's just because of the person that I am. He just doesn't like how I embarrassed him last time sometimes and a lot of the things that I said, and I think he doesn't want to go through that again. So he'd rather go with somebody who's going to talk nice about him and give him compliments.
All right, Danny, are you buying or selling what Dom Cruz is saying, that the UFC could be working their way to eliminating 125 pounds?
Jason, if the UFC killed divisions for fighters not putting butts in seats, they'd have two of them. I'm selling this comment. It's real simple. They have a lot of flyweight fighters in a contract. Flyweight is an accepted weight class. It should be there. And more important than not, even if they do the Cejudo fight, UFC loves putting championship fights on pay-per-view. And one more title belt gives them one more opportunity to do so. So I am selling the idea of the flyweight division being killed.
So let's just say they do Cejudo Dillashaw. Do we get an interim flyweight title fight on that same card?
Oh, that would be gross. That'd be gross. Yeah.
You know the UFC would do that too.
Johnson Formiga.
Man, you got to give Formiga a title shot at this point.
Yeah, I mean, the when you look at what Dom said, you know, we watched UFC 229. Derek Lewis became a star. Formiga Pettis should have been a star-making fight. No one watching the prelims, no one watching that TV card, came away remembering who Formiga was.
True story. True story. Go to my buddy's house to watch the pay-per-view. And, yeah, we kind of, after about the first round, we kind of checked out on that fight.
That fight wasn't great.
Yeah. It was like, oh, man, you need another beer? That was pretty much the conversation.
Dude, yeah, like here's the thing. We can put on our Point Dexter glasses and talk about the merits of the technique, but we're here to talk about reality. And the reality is we were in rooms with people watching this card, and yeah, no one knows who Formiga is.
Yeah, no one knows. Of course, let's end this week's podcast, talk about a couple of notes. We already mentioned Dustin Poirier out of UFC 230. Sounds like Nate Diaz is going to be off the card as well. Bellator announced that Alessio Sakara is going to headline Bellator 211 in Italy on December the 1st. Note on this fight card, it's going to air live in the United States on Paramount Network. That's a Saturday, 4 p.m. East time. And in the announcement of this fight card, Bellator also announced that the Bellator kickboxing event will air live on the Bellator app at 12 p.m. And that's the first time Bellator kickboxing has been aired live, I believe. So great to hear there. I want to say maybe a California show they aired live after like a Bellator event, but in terms of internationally, first time they've aired it live. And of course, so you mentioned about Eubanks losing out on her title shot. UFC going to give us a fight we all want to see: Valentina Shevchenko versus Joanna Jędrzejczyk for UFC 231. So of course we'll have two title fights on that card, which once again it kind of makes you go, what is the point of signing a bout agreement?
Yeah, dude. Look, I'm looking forward to Shevchenko Joanna, but I will say, and I'm not a fan of a lot of the comments Eubanks put out there, because at the end of the day, it's hard to talk about deserving things with her record.
Yeah.
But I do feel for her because it does suck to be told you're going to compete for the title and that's taken away from you. That does suck, and that does show you the UFC currently does not have all their ducks in a row.
Yeah, I mean, look, it was a title fight no one wanted to see anyway. Let's be honest about it.
That's true. 100% true.
When they said that initially that was going to be the main event for the MSG card, I'm like, no way. There's no way that's going to be the main event.
Yeah.
Because it would have been an awful buy rate. And I saw someone, maybe it was Dave Doyle, had tweeted out a picture of the available seats for that MSG show. Ooh, a lot of seats available.
Yep, that one does not put butts in seats.
No, but I mean, yeah, sign me up for Shevchenko. I mean, let's knock on wood. Hopefully, we get to what's that, December 8th, and Ortega Holloway and Shevchenko Ioana. Man, sign me up for that one.
Absolutely, sign me up. I'm so down for those fights.
Yeah, can't wait for that. But I did see. I think it's like, next 2 weeks we'll have a UFC show. But after that, I believe we have 8 straight weeks of UFC events.
Are you prepared?
No.
No, we never are. The
real question is, how many do you watch live as opposed to DVR?
Yeah, probably half of them.
Yeah, probably. I mean, there's some fights coming up that you're like, oh, that's a notable fight. I mean, you look at, Volkov Smith, just what it means, at 200. In 5 pounds, Frankie Edgar against Korean Zombie. I don't see that well going for the Korean Zombie. Magni Ponzinibbio. Okay. Not a bad fight. Blades and Ganu. God, Curtis Blades should get the title shot over Derek Lewis, but we all know why Derek Lewis is getting the title shot. I love the Usman Dos Anjos fight. That's a great fight. Dos Santos Tuivasa. Not bad. Ortega Holloway, obviously very interested in that one. We don't know what the Fox main event is going to be. It sounds like they want Kevin Lee in the main event of that one. So we'll see what they do there.
Yeah, just a lot of solid main events, and can't wait to talk about them.
And of course, you can always listen to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com. Coming up next week on the podcast, we'll recap what happens at Bellator 207-208, plus of PFL number 9. Also, have a couple interviews that I've been recording over the past couple of days. One of those is Abdiel Velasquez, who's a local fighter here in my hometown of Tampa, Florida. He's actually going to be a part of that bare knuckle event next week. I had a chance to talk to him about that. So look forward to that on next week's edition of the MMA Report podcast, which of course comes out every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com.
This is a Rush the Field quick fix on Radio Influence.
I don't care if you have 5 undefeated teams, Chris. They would never, ever in a million years leave out an undefeated Notre Dame team from the college football playoff.
Well,
there's too much money involved. It would never happen.
If there are 5, I mean, good Lord, we never have 4 unbeaten. So
no, but I'm talking about the craziest of crazy scenarios. They would never, ever leave out an undefeated Notre Dame team.
I think... I don't know. I mean, there are a lot of people that agree with you. I think the committee truly wants to pick the 4 best.
That make the most money.
Okay, go ahead. But I think we'd be foolish to think that past performance and brand doesn't have a factor. Because when TCU gets jumped the last week, we all know that if that was Oklahoma or Texas, they probably don't get jumped. So name brands matter. I agree with you. However, if you had a scenario where unbeaten Alabama, unbeaten Ohio State, unbeaten Clemson,
unbeaten West Virginia, and unbeaten Notre Dame.
West Virginia and unbeaten Notre Dame, now you're dealing with a scenario where it's basically, in my view, West Virginia, Notre Dame. And I agree with you. Probably Notre Dame gets in. But if you had a scenario and you couldn't have this because Alabama, Georgia, and the
same. They play each other, yeah.
But if you had another unbeaten team, well, let me just say this.
Forget the unbeaten, Chris. I'm going to give you the craziness now.
Well, I mean, but let me finish this if I could.
Okay.
If you had an unbeaten Texas or Oklahoma and an unbeaten Alabama, and an unbeaten Ohio State, and an unbeaten Clemson, and you got 5 brands, that's where somebody's getting left out that you would say, oh, they're not going to leave this one out. Now, maybe it's not Notre Dame getting left out, but that's where I think, you know, that's where it becomes, you know, a little bit iffy, if you know what I mean.
Rush the Field with Scott Seidenberg and Chris Leandry can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.